Hello, United fans, and welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn, and joining me today is my regular co-host, Brish, on this day in which we've beaten Everton 2-0 at Old Trafford. But Brish, was that the worst 2-0 win ever?
Listen, 3 points in the bag. That's what matters. Yes, like Groundhog Day, isn't it? I feel like I come on here all the time when we win and just go, yep, 3 points in the bag. That's the most important thing. Performance leaves much to be desired. And that proved to be the case again today for large parts.
Yeah, another lackluster performance from United, and the stats really back that up as well. Only 51% at home to your relegation threatening team, in terms of the possession. Everton had 23 shots to United's 15. I mean, both teams had a similar number of passes. Everton had nearly as many shots on target as United, and I think Onana had to be called upon, a few times. And obviously, Everton's finish was woeful. I seen a stat during the game that Everton have only scored 14 goals from open play this season. They have drawn 10 blanks this season as well in the Premier League, and it really showed, didn't it? Everton were dreadful in the final play.
Absolutely. They had nothing in the final third. Luckily for us, that's all I can say about that, really. Because could they finish, then yeah, it might have been different.
Yeah, I was not impressed by it at all. And one of the things that I have to break up or bring up, sorry, that it's been annoying me probably for a number of years, and it's still continuing to this day, is that when United are on the attack, they constantly play the ball behind their teammate, and it stalls the attacks. What do they do all week on the training pitch, Brush?
Your guess is as good as mine.
United's build-up play is atrocious. The passing is wayward at times. Now, Casemiro must have given the ball away the first six times he touched the ball today. So it's not just McTominay. It's so many players are guilty of just giving the ball away sloppily. And yet, constantly playing the ball behind the teammate. When they're on the counter-attack and they're playing the ball out to Rashford or Garnacho, and they just play it behind them, and then that allows Everton to get more bodies behind the ball. And you're like, what are you doing? They just look really poorly coached as well, I have to be honest. And today, even though we won, it done nothing to convince me that Ten Hag is going to be here beyond the season.
It's one of those, isn't it? I think we're just gonna have to wait and see what happens. Because obviously we know when new ownership comes in, they usually have plans. And if he's a part of that or not, I really don't know. Based on what we've seen, the one thing we can all agree on, I think the quality of football has not been good enough. You have to factor in injuries and stuff as well. But there is a certain naivety with the manager and stubbornness, I think. More than anything, persisting to play a certain way when the players are not maybe adept at that. The two that stood out for me today, though, special mention to Johnny Evans. He got a standing ovation today, and rightly so. And also Garnacho, bright spark.
Garnacho obviously won both penalties, given away by James Tarkowski and Ben Godfrey. Garnacho's trickery, catching them, but with they put their foot in, he was too quick for them.
I was a little bit surprised actually, Carl, because obviously that's not the kind of mistake I expect from a seasoned centre back like Tarkowski. So it just kind of highlights the problem that Garnacho can cause, you know?
Just inside the penalty area on the left-hand side of the Stratford end, Garnacho drops his shoulder to go past him, and he sticks out a left leg. And yeah, that was a dreadful decision by a 31-year-old centre back, as you say. But he's up against a teenager, he's not the quickest, Tarkowski. So, it makes it even more strange that he made that decision to put his foot in there.
Definitely.
And then another mazy run from Garnacho led to Ben Godfrey standing on his toe, basically, and another clear as day penalty. So Garnacho is really causing havoc. I have to say, though, that the first 20-25 minutes, Aberdeen were by far the better team, and United were all over the place. So Garnacho really got United out of a hole today, I feel, by winning that first penalty.
Oh, definitely. When we were 1-0 up, I was kind of just looking around thinking, oh, not quite sure how we're leading here. And, you know, and then the second one came as well, and it really settled us down. But, yeah, honestly, I wasn't sure where the goals were going to come from if it weren't for the pens. Garnacho was perhaps quite unlucky not to get on the score sheet. There was the one chance where Bruno played it in, but overhit it slightly. It's very harsh to criticise Garnacho there. He tried his best to get on the end of it, but there was just too much pace on the ball. And in the second half, which I thought was quite lacklustre in its entirety, Garnacho had another chance as well, where it went over the bar. But, you know, that's an element of his game that hopefully he'll improve in years to come.
Hold on, Simon here with a comment here that I'm going to disagree with just by looking at the opening line. He says, I disagree regarding Erik ten Hag and I'm a blue. He won't get sacked at the end of the season. I can assure you, Simon, he will be sacked at the end of the season, like me and Brush have talked about. I think
I'm not sure, Simon. I'm on the fence. It depends entirely on what Ineos want to do, right? So I don't know.
Here's the thing. You mentioned it already that new owners always make changes and they usually change the manager as well. They're not going to change everyone around them and just keep him. You know, that's just so unlikely that they would change the scouts, the medical team, the players, the directors, and then keep him.
But I can also see a thing, Carl, where they do it in sections, right? So if they're getting a few pieces in this summer, and then obviously Ten Hag's only got another 12 months left after this season. So you I could potentially see a scenario where they maybe let him see out his contract, maybe, you know.
I don't.
Goes with structure above him for a year.
We have 16 defeats in all competitions this season and bottom of the Champions League group, out of the League Cup in October. Another few hammerings, dreadful away record against the top teams, some awful signings that he's
made. Is it all on him, though? Like, surely there has been blame elsewhere as well, no? Does the buck stop with him?
It does stop with him in many issues. I mean, I heard somebody today blaming the Shaw and Malasia situation on the medical team. Supposedly, Ten Hag took medical advice that the two of them are going to be available in January. And that's obviously turned out not to be the case.
It looks ridiculous now that we gave away Reguilon in Jan.
But he decided to get rid of Reguilon and Alvaro Fernandez. Those were his calls. So the buck does start with him on that issue. But I'm just not impressed by what I see on match day. United, there's no patterns of play with United. As I say, they keep playing the ball behind their teammate. His philosophy just simply does not work, whatever that is. I don't agree with his team selections, with constantly playing Victor Lindelof a left back. I know there's not many options, but
there really isn't any other options. I'd rather him over Amrabat. That's all I'm saying currently.
He could play Dallo in that position, maybe Lindelof at right back. That would probably make more sense to me. His substitutions are abysmal, and they always make United worse. He's doing the same with Amad Diallo as he did with Pellestri. He will not get a chance. He plays Forzan over Amad Diallo, and Forzan, to me, is nowhere near this level. And I know Amad Diallo has got something about him. He may or may not have a long-term future at United, but he's certainly got more ability than Forzan, and yet Ten Hag was playing him ahead of Diallo until Forzan got injured.
Yeah, the Anthony minutes today, I would have liked to have seen Amad come on instead.
Yeah. Yeah, and somebody made the point that Ten Hag was only able to select two of his signings in the starting 11. Well, there were a number of signings on the bench, and he doesn't select them because they're not good enough, because they're poor signings. So I totally disagree with his sympathy he gets, saying that he can only pick two of his own signings. He had lots more of them on the bench, and he's not picking them because they're not good enough. So as you can see, I'm just not a fan of the manager at all. But even if I was, I still think that Ineos will make a change in the summer.
Yeah, I can definitely see a scenario in which they do. if they do, I hope they're doing their due diligence now instead of leaving it till last minute. But from the early signs are looking good, though. It seems as though these guys have a plan. Things seem to be a lot more organized.
But if their plan is to bring in Graham Potter, though, then we're fucked.
Well, yeah, this is the other thing. The only other managers I've seen us linked to are the likes of De Zerbi and Potter. And if that's the change, I don't really know. Get me excited.
De Zerbi, I wasn't excited about him anyway. But
yeah,
lots more.
A bit overhyped. And he got found out as well in the Europa by Roma just the other night. Yeah, yeah.
He's taken quite a few batterings this season, De Zerbi.
Yeah. If we were to move on, though, Carl, I'd want like proper planning around that. So, you know, it would have to be someone of a certain ilk. It would have to be like a Nagelsmann or a Simeone Inzaghi or a Xabi Alonso.
To me, it has to be someone who's won the league at a top team. It cannot be someone like De Zerbi, whose man is Shakhtar Donetsk and Brighton, and his never actually won, you know, serious silverware. Now, losing 4-0 to Luton Town, losing 4-0 to Roma, getting beat 5-1 by Everton, you get away with that at Brighton. You know, you won't get away with that.
Yeah, you're going to get scrutinised at Old Trafford week in, week out, aren't you?
Oh. Yeah.
The pressure's different.
Brighton can win two games and lose two games, and that's okay. That's abysmal form at United. He won't get away with that. Yeah. So I'm not convinced by him at all. And as soon as he loses a couple of games, the first thing the fans will say is, well, what has he won? What has he done? Because there'll be absolutely no belief that he can turn it around. So
that's an unfortunate thing in the modern game, isn't it? I think everyone's going to get scrutinized like that. But how many truly elite managers are there out there? There's only a handful, right? So whoever you go for is going to be somewhat of a risk.
Yeah,
if somebody like an Ancelotti was 10 years younger, I'd say, yeah, you know, no brainer, go get him. But you know,
he's not available anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and we're not in that position. So, whoever you bring in, it's going to have to be someone young, someone bright, who's not quite the finished article, you know.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that Simon here, being a City fan, is more than happy to see Ten Hag another year in the dugout. You know the way Liverpool fans wanted Solskjaer to stay. And do you remember, we're going a long way back here, but do you remember when United fans just wanted to see Benitez to keep getting a new contract at Liverpool, because the longer he stayed there, the better, really.
Especially after he had his infamous meltdown about the facts. Do you remember that speech?
Well, who doesn't?
It all kind of went pear-shaped after that.
Even people who weren't born then have probably heard about that.
Yeah, it's just like the Kevin Keegan one at Newcastle. People can recite that to you. I'd love it if we meet there.
Yeah, Benitez was successful in his first two seasons at Liverpool, but after that I don't think he was very good, and the more he went on, the more we wanted him to stay. But eventually, they got to get rid of him. But
the Champions League win definitely bought him a lot more time than otherwise I think he would have gotten.
Yeah, yeah. But that'll always buy you time. But this is the thing. The best time to make a change is in the summer in terms of the manager. The last thing I want is for him to be given another season, and then we run into another mess at the start of next season, and then he has to be sacked by Halloween or Christmas, and then, you know,
then you're looking at Inter, aren't you? To see out the season.
Yeah, you're either interim, or you're hoping that a really good manager is out of work. You know, at the moment that's not the case. I think the main reason why he's still in charge is because anyone that Ineos might be interested in are probably in work at the moment, and they don't want to spend the money on an interim. I believe that the sacking Solskjaer and bringing in Ranić cost United upwards of £10 million, and I don't think that Ineos want to waste that kind of money on an interim, especially when we've only got 8 weeks or something of the season left. There's no
exactly real... And also, like you say, everyone worth getting is currently in employment, and it's the business end of the season as well, so if they are keeping their eyes on those managers, they probably want to see them finish off the season and see what silverware they end up with. Apart from the ones that we spoke about, who all look like they're going to win stuff. Well, Nagelsmann's with the German national team, so I know his contract is up in the summer anyway after the tournament. Ruben Amorim at Sporting Lisbon is another one. He's been talked about over the years. It might be time that he, you know, challenges himself elsewhere.
He's a Spurs manager. Here's the thing with him. He's exactly where Ten Hag was 2 years ago. It would be a massive risk to take someone from a minor league and put him in charge of Manchester United. The job could be too big for him. So I wouldn't be going down that route at the moment. I want to see him do something, you know, at a higher level before I, you know, decide upon that one. A name that I've been mentioning in the last couple of weeks, which hasn't been talked about too much, is Simone Inzaghi. He's doing a great job at Inter Milan, as everyone knows.
They look as if they're going to win Serie A. They're running away with Serie A this season. And then the Champions League, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, of course, he's won 8 trophies in Italy already with Lazio and Inter Milan. He got the Champions League final last season. Mm-hmm. And definitely did not have the second best team in the tournament, so that always reflects well on the manager. They lost narrowly to the best team in the world. As you say, they're running away with Serie A this season.
Yeah.
And they score lots of goals. They keep lots of clean sheets. You know, what more can you ask for? Like, some fans might not like the 3-5-2 formation, but if he got United winning, I wouldn't give a damn what friggin' formation he plays. He looks like an astute coach to me. How do you see it, Brush?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. My only thing would be that, you know, after listening to what Sir Jim was saying, I feel as though they're going to put some emphasis on what the United way is, whatever that may be. You know, because I know when we talk about the United way, we think back to the 90s, to the glory era. I think they need to decide as a club what way in which they would like us to play. And I think that will influence who comes in. So I'm not sure if we're totally willing to just get a manager in who's going to change everything around. But personally, I don't have an issue with it as long as it works, you know.
Yeah, I personally like something different than what's in 4-3-3 all the time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if he comes, I'd have absolutely no problem with it, especially if we could also get Lautaro. Now I'm in dreamland.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be signing another striker. And Fabrizio Romano said today that we're going to be signing a starting left-back next season, which is very, very interesting.
I mean, it's about damn time. It's several years overdue.
Yeah, and both our first and second choice left backs are just completely unavailable for most of the season. It's a disaster.
I'll tell you what, the wing back they've got at Inter Milan, he's pretty good as well. Age probably doesn't help him, DiMarco, but yeah, some of the crosses he puts into the play.
Yeah, and Gervaldo with Bayer Leverkusen, fabulous player.
Mm-hmm.
And Frimpong obviously would fit into that system.
Yeah, very much so. And also Lautaro, I mean, as unrealistic as it is. Could you imagine? Because he does all of the dog work around another striker. That's what made his partnership with Lukaku so good. So could you imagine if we had him next to Hoyland?
Yeah, he could be our Julian Alvarez, if you like.
Yeah, precisely. But he's actually got a killer instinct as well. His goal tally is ridiculous. I think he's one of the top marksmen in Europe as well this season.
Yeah. It's just getting me excited even talking about that. By the way, it's worth mentioning that I was impressed by Jarrod Brathwaite today, who's been linked heavily with Manchester United. He prevented a certain goal from Kobbie Mainoo in the 6-yard box, and that was really good defending. Big centre half. He must be about 6'5", 6'6". He's a goal threat at the other end of the pitch as well. Mm. Still very young, still only 21, I think. And I believe that, you know, United's new sporting department are big fans of his, so if we can get that deal done, I would be in favour. Another thing that's worth mentioning is Onana, the midfielder for Everton. I was not impressed by him today, and he's been linked with United.
He had quite an audacious bicycle kick. Didn't have much luckily, thankfully for us.
he was very late with some of his challenges and give away free kicks in dangerous positions. And that overhead kick, yeah, it was Onana. It was a pass back from Onana to Onana. It was pretty poor. It wasn't poor. I suppose it was a decent effort given how far out he was, but it was never going to trouble the goalkeeper with that kind of, from that distance and that power on it.
Yeah. Oh, and just to confirm, 6'5", Jared Brathwaite.
Yeah, he's absolute monster of a man.
Very commanding.
And really good on the ball as well, and left-footed player.
And only 21 years old, homegrown as well. He'll fit the quota. A lot of boxes.
So if, like, Martinez, since April last year, we've hardly had him available at all. So if that sadly continues into next season, in Brathwaite we'll have a ready-made replacement there to play at left centre-back. So that signing makes, you know, a lot of sense from that point of view. But hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Yeah.
Hopefully Martinez is available.
Yeah. But yeah, again, with Brathwaite, versatile as well. I think I've seen him fill in all across the back for the. So, yeah.
Yeah, of course, he could play, slot in at left-back if needed. Like Dan Byrne at Newcastle. He's a giant of a fullback.
Precisely. It's not going to look pretty, but, you know, when needs must, it's good to have these options.
Yeah, you see, with us missing our first choice left backs and having no left backs really to select, the minimum that I want in that position is a left-footed player, and we don't even have that available to us. Mm-hmm. I know some people have mentioned Anthony, but let's get real for a moment.
I don't know about that one. I just think those people have been playing too much FIFA, to be honest, Kyle.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, it's ridiculous. to take a right winger and to play him at left back just because the main reasoning is what? Because he's left-footed.
Honestly. If Ten Hag did decide to do that madness, how long do you think it would be before Anthony would be sent off in the game?
I mean, I can maybe understand if they were, you know, championing trying to turn him into a right wing back, similar to the conversion made by Valencia. But to stick him on the opposite side, I don't understand it. And also, let him try and get competent in his preferred position first. Like, we've not even been convinced by what he's supposed to be good at.
Well, I don't think he's going to get much more of a chance, to be honest. Because what we're being told, you know, by people in the know, is that the new sporting department just want to get rid of Anthony, regardless of what Ten Hag thinks. They're putting him up for sale this summer, and I don't blame them, to be honest. But they're not going to get much money back. Let's be frank about it.
No, they're not.
But this is what United have to do. This is what happened at City. This is what happened at other clubs when they were bought over. When you want to have a clear out, you need to be prepared to take losses, financial losses.
Yeah, and you have to be ruthless with it as well. My only thing is, obviously, you need a clear sense of direction in what it is that you're trying to achieve before you just start selling. But yeah, absolutely. You know, you'll remember when Pep came in at Man City and just ousted Joe Hart as the number one immediately. And it's not like Joe did anything wrong. He didn't put a foot wrong in the years prior when he was there. But, you know, he just wasn't the guy for Pep.
Yeah. He's going to be retiring this season, I believe.
He's at Celtic, no?
He is, yeah. He's had a couple of successful seasons there. Yeah. This season they're getting it a bit more tight. He's about 36, 37 now. So he didn't really fit the Pep's, you know, ideal of, you know, a sweeper keeper.
Yeah.
So he had to be moved on.
And then he brought in another one who was an absolute disaster class. And then he had to go as well.
Just on that, though, we've been saying all season, both of us, about what a disaster class that Andre Onana has been.
Yes.
But I want to whisper this quietly. Is he shown signs of improvement in the last few games?
Do you know, touch wood, let's not spoil it. The thing is, when he's good, he can be good. It's just that he's always got a mistake in him. Like, I'm never comfortable when a shot rains down on him.
No,
like last week against City, Carl. Oh my day! The second goal, like, you know, what was he doing? It looks worse on the replay. Like, what? Is, what are this guy's wrists made out of?
Yeah, it was disappointing, but it spoiled a really good performance by him, you know, overall in that City game. But he's looking more commanding of his area. He's coming for crosses. He's, you know, he's catching the ball rather than punching it. You know, he's making decent saves. You know, he's not flapping at things. He's not giving the ball away when he's in possession.
Listen, with a settled back four in front of him as well, I do think we'll see a better Onana. But my concern is, like I say, that second goal that City scored last week, it shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, United again today conceded another 23 shots. It's 198 in the last, you know, 8 games or something. Absolutely insane shots.
I think I was reading something like only Sheffield United have, you know, conceded more shots than us.
If they did get that down to, you know, next season, they get that down to, you know, a normal level of shots to concede by a club like Manchester United, then the goalkeeper will be under less pressure, and it won't matter that Onana is not primed ahead, if you get where I'm coming from. But he's under so much pressure now that, you know, he's going to let some things in because so many shots are on target against United in every single game.
That's the concern, isn't it? But yeah, the only other thing for me is just some of the goals that he concedes, I just think, you know, a competent keeper should do better there. Be a keeper with decent fundamentals.
Yeah.
Do you remember the goal against Luton that he conceded? Where he just kind of jumped up in the air and flapped his wings. It was like he was trying to take flight. I was like, what are you doing?
It was like me trying to do an impression of Schmeichel starfish.
Yeah, see, stuff like that, it just annoys me because, like, there's no way to fix that.
Yeah, this is the thing. A lot of people are saying on social media that how well he's playing at the moment.
Yeah.
We've been here before, back in the autumn, where he had a really good spell.
And we were here last season as well, like, despite all of the criticisms coming the way of De Gea, you know, the stats people would be like, oh, but he's got X amount of clean sheets, you know?
He's more clean sheets than Alisson this season, I believe. Mm. But then Alisson is currently injured, so I'm not sure how much that actually means. Kevin Kelleher has been playing in the last few Liverpool games. I don't read too much into that. To me, I would say last season was one of De Gea's poorest, and yet he came away with a golden glove. So, you know, clean sheets are a collective thing. That's down to the defence as much as the goalkeeper.
Yeah, so we have to take these things with a pinch of salt somewhat. But I do agree with you, like, it is nice to see him put in these kind of performances. Definitely a marked improvement. But like I say, there's always going to be things that annoy me about this guy.
You would have to play like this from now to the end of the season for me to be convinced.
Yep.
Maybe not even then.
Yeah. It's just, honestly, when I saw the replay as well, it just makes my blood boil. Like, when when it's within reaching distance and you're not getting a hand to anything, it just annoys me to no end.
Yeah, I feel as if he's going to, throughout a season, every season that he is here, if he does continue beyond the season, he's going to have good spells and bad spells. That's the way it's going to be. And is that good enough for where we want to be? I don't think so.
I mean, in my head at the moment, I think it depends obviously a lot on what we do going forward in terms of the manager, if there's going to be a change or whatnot, but I can't see us keeping him beyond two full seasons.
Yeah, probably not.
So, that's my early prediction for now. I reckon this summer, he'll probably stay, but yeah, in another 12 months' time, we'll probably ask questions if he continues on.
Yeah, but if we did bring in Simone Inzaghi, who has worked with Onana, does that give him another lifeline?
Oh, I guess it does, under Inzaghi, because obviously, you know, that's the coach he's worked under. But then if we move to a back three as well, you know, it changes things, doesn't it? If you're going five at the back, three centre-backs, wing-backs, maybe a style that suits him. But again, I'd still be annoyed at the calamities, though, because that's part of his game.
He wouldn't be my choice as a goalkeeper.
If
I was playing, you know, FIFA or Championship Manager, I would not be selecting him in my team.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest about it. So, once again, the substitutions left my head. I was scratching my head again. So, he brings Amrabat on for Manu. Why? And then he brings Anthony on for Garnacho, who's our best player. Why? Did not understand that. Willie Kambwala came on late on for Johnny Evans. He got the standing ovation, as you say. So did Garnacho.
Deservedly, for Johnny. And I'll tell you what, I was, you know, when we discussed it in the summer, you were the first one to break the news to me about the link. And I laughed at it. And yeah, honestly, he's been brilliant.
Yeah, it's just a pity that he's not about 7 years younger.
Yeah.
Why would you bring off your best midfielder and your best player on the day to bring on his two signings that have been awful for Manchester United? But those are always his go-to substitutions.
Mm-hmm.
But they're actually so bad that he can't justify starting them, but he still brings them on as the first subs. They're not going to...
Yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher, isn't it? It's got me wondering sometimes, is there something that we're not seeing that's happening in training? Like, why are you giving preferential treatment, it seems like, to these players?
Christian Eriksen's not getting a look in.
At all. I mean, he's gone in the summer, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean... He's still good for 30 minutes, I would say.
Definitely. See, he's the late sub that I would like to see to help out in midfield, to bring a bit of calmness, experience.
Yeah. In both situations, whether you're losing or you're winning, I would bring him on with 30 minutes to go. Also, Amad Diallo not getting a look in. It's just the same as Plessery in the first part of the season. He's just taking up another space on the bench, and it's a complete waste of a player who's got ability. How Ten Hag can think that Forzan is ahead of Diallo in the packing order is really beyond me. Because what we've seen from Forzan against Fulham and then the sub-appearance against City was not very good, was it?
No. Very harsh as well, I think, to just throw the kid in there. Obviously, on his debut, he came off, I think, after 60 minutes. Not very impressive. But again, just out of the cold and into the team. I don't know. I don't know what he's seeing in him over Ahmad, especially after the season Ahmad had last season. I know it was in the Championship, but still, you know, he had a stellar season. And then to just be getting these kind of minutes, just next to none, just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's... Like I say, it isn't just one reason why I'm not a fan of Ten Hag. It's a number of reasons, and this is one of them. I just do not. He's not someone that I would want to be part of this new, reset. He's just part of the old regime, and I think this is my belief, and it's also what a prominent Ajax fan said on social media, the job is just too big for him. There's certain managers that they'll win leagues with Ajax, they'll do well at Dortmund, but as far as taking Manchester United to the next level, they're not capable of doing that. I mean, only three managers in our history have won the league title. Is Ten Hag going to be the fourth one? Not for me. No chance. And that might be a strong opinion, which people don't like, but that's where I am with it. So, Scott McTominay, another very, very poor game in the centre of the park. His passing is dreadful. And
in light of his last couple of appearances, I thought this was probably one of his better days.
Got booked because his second touch is a tackle, and he was booked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this happens far too often. Yes, he's actually gained United 12 points this season in the Premier League with his late goals. And that obviously makes him a sellable asset. which is great. And he'll be pure profit because he came through the academy. So will Rashford if he sold. That's what it was meant to, that's what I was going to say to you earlier in the show. Mm. United will look to sell academy graduates because it'll be pure profit. And I can see one or two of them going for good money. So watch this.
Yeah, especially with the Rashford thing, I think you've mentioned before, right? Especially you know, with Mbappe going to Real Madrid, perhaps there's an opportunity there to shift Rashi to PSG. If there is such an offer on the table, then that's one they would seriously have to look at this summer.
Well, with that goal against City, you know, he's going to keep club interest in him, because some people were saying that, you know, he's not done nothing this season. He's only scored a handful of goals. Who's going to be interested in him? But he showed what he's capable of against City.
Yeah, something out of nothing. And it was a fantastic finish against City.
Very interesting comments from Wayne Rooney today as the pundit for BT.
Mm.
He was asked how much sympathy does he have for Marcus Rashford at the moment. He says not much, to be honest. He's in a privileged position.
Mm-hmm.
Rooney, even when he was playing in the MLS at 35 years old, was running back and making tackles.
That was his game, wasn't it? Never say die. You know,
Rooney's watching a very lazy Rashford week in, week out. Yeah. He also wasn't very complimentary towards him when he was in the studio for the Forest FA Cup match. Neither was Alan Shearer, of course, on that night.
Mm-hmm.
So, United fans get annoyed about this. They start slagging off Shearer for, you know, giving his honest opinion on Rashford. But he's telling the truth. It's a player that's not fulfilling his potential because he's not giving his all. He's a player that's down tools. And that's what we've been watching all season.
And I think that's the most disappointing thing, isn't it? It's because people do rate him because, you know, he does have the talent. So when people see that it's not being fulfilled, you know, it's gonna annoy them.
And some of the reports have been saying that, and we don't know how true or false this is, that Rashford is waiting to see what happens with Ten Hag at the end of the season before making a decision on his own future. That if that's true, that tells me that him and Ten Hag don't have a great relationship, as reported by Neil Costas in The Sun, that they basically not talking that much anymore. I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise me given the amount of times that Rashford has been disciplined by Ten Hag. Three times now, I think it is, and obviously the most famous one being the two nights out in Belfast.
Utterly ridiculous. Like, being someone of that profile, you should know better.
Yeah, and I think the worst part about it from Ten Hag's point of view is that he lied about when he was actually out. You know, United players were due for training on the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Rashford told the boss that he was out on the Wednesday night, but it turned out he was also out on the Thursday night.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's so ridiculous on his part as well, because obviously, you know, the era we live in, there's going to be pictures, things are going to get posted on social media. How he thought he could lie to management and get away with that, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, no surprise that there was mobile phone footage of him in a nightclub, because people are going to recognise him.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Rooney for the moment. I get the impression that he's not a fan of Gen Z. You know, Rooney is a millennial like me and you. And I think Gen Z can piss him off. You know, the Gen Z footballers, they're a totally different breed to what we used to.
Yeah, definitely. Because, with this new generation, I mean, football's almost an afterthought for them. It's like their little bit on the side. Like, these people are just out here to be celebrities. You know, they're signing brand deals, they do fashion shows. Whereas even before in our day, obviously, they used to do that, but it used to be the other way around, right? Football was still the first thing on their minds, whereas these days, I don't know if it is.
Yeah, and they don't seem to care about winning trophies.
No, I mean, listen, look at the amount of wealth these kids are amassing. They've got nothing to play for or work towards. Look at the problem that Chelsea have got. You know, £1 billion spent, and where are they? They're not even the top half of the table, I don't think. I think they're still 11th. And, you know, when you put these young kids and young men on contracts for 8 years, what have they got to play for?
Yeah, and that brings me on nicely to Menu, who's now in negotiations for a new contract. Absolutely no problem with that whatsoever, but we have to be careful what we give them in terms of wages.
Absolutely. The structure, the wage structure is so important. It has to be, obviously it has to be enough to reflect his importance in the first team setup, but at the same time, you don't want to, give him too much too soon.
Yeah, let's not go and offer him 250 grand a week,
Yeah,
please.
let's
No,
not do
don't
that.
do
Please, hell no. Hell to the no. Let's make it incentive based as well. So maybe a lower weekly wage, but then add a few bonuses in there for hitting certain targets.
You should do that with all the players from now on,
Yeah,
I feel.
yeah, yeah. For success as well. Reward them for like cup wins or where you finish in the league, the higher up you get, incentivize it.
Yeah, I remember Roy Keane talking about when he played for United, there was goal bonuses, win bonuses, clean sheet bonuses, trophy
Yeah,
bonuses. That's the way it should be.
absolutely. Give them a little kick. Give them mo keep them motivated.
Another thing that Rooney was talking about today, he was asked about Menu and he likened them to a young Bastian Schweinsteiger. What do you think about that comment?
Listen, I before that I had Rio Ferdinand compare him to Seedorf. Like these are legendary names, and I'm just very keen to keep Cobby's feet firmly on the ground. He's a fantastic talent, but we've not even seen one full season of him yet. And I just don't want to, I don't want to burden him. I'm happy watching him. He's certainly a talent. Listen, I would have absolutely no complaints because for me, Bastian Schweinsteiger is probably one of the most complete midfielders I've seen.
And as usual, when it comes to Manchester United under Ed Woodward, we got him when he was w well over the hill and injury prone.
I'll tell you what, that's still one of my favorite signings post Fergie. I know he wasn't like great when he was with us, but still, I loved having him around, especially because we had lost all of the experience when all the old guard left in Pat, Rio, and Vidic. And it was just nice to have someone about the place who had won everything, who had been at the highest level. And I thought, even if he can't play week in, week out, that's who we need in the dressing room and who can pass on his knowledge and wisdom to the youth. So I was quite upset when Jose came in and got rid of him.
Didn't just get rid of him, but he froze him out for 9 months before that.
Yes, yeah.
That as well.
And even in the last game that he played, I think it was the League Cup game. I can't remember who it was against. Wigan, I think it was. He scored and assisted. He put in a man of the match performance. And I think Jose said afterwards as well that he regretted how he treated Bastia.
Yeah, that was bang out of order, really, from
Yeah.
Jose. A
Like,
World
I
Cup winner.
understand somebody wanting to come in and make changes. You can't really argue with that. You have to go with what the gaffer wants, right? But someone of that ilk, of that experience, yeah, it was very very poor the way that was dealt with.
Yeah, he's a World Cup winner, Champions League winner,
Yeah.
multiple title winner in Germany,
And I've
and
got a lot of time for him, Carl, because even now he still tweets about us, every game day.
I always see it. Yeah,
Oh shit.
especially when it's a big game, you always see his tweet. I seen his tweet ahead of the Manchester Derby. Would you like Bastian? We're not going to win this game. I'm sorry. We would need 10 of him in his prime to win that game, and unfortunately, we
Listen,
weren't in a position.
I'll settle for one.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like out of all the midfielders I've seen, he was, yeah, he's right up there for me, just complete.
Yeah, brilliant. It's a pity we didn't see the best of him at United.
Yeah, if only we could have got that done a few years prior. Oh, what would have been?
We had Di Maria, Falcao, Schweinsteiger all on the same team, and we didn't see the best of them. Ed Woodward was essentially playing Championship Manager. He thought.
A lot of it didn't make sense, did it? Like, it was the big sexy names coming in, but no balance in the squad whatsoever. I remember that summer when we got Falcao, and I was like, wait, how are you going to fit him, Van Persie, and Rooney in the same team? Like, who's going to be sold? And they didn't sell any of them. I was like, oh, okay. This is strange.
Yeah, Van Gaal actually gave that a go until we lost 5-3 at Leicester, and then he binned it.
Yeah, it's craziness. And again, poor planning as well, because I remember that year when Van Gaal was coming in. It's when Lewandowski's contract was running down. And I was like, oh, if you did want to cash in on Van Persie and move people on, see, that's the guy we should be targeting.
Yeah, and he's still banging them in at his age. Yeah. Mid-30s now. Yeah, so we need to obviously recruit a left back. We need a striker to work alongside Højlund or rotate with him.
Yep.
Yeah, we probably need a right
midfielder
winger
and a centre half as well.
We need a centre half. Actually, we need a player in every position.
Yeah, it's just about priority, though, right? So yeah, for me, definitely we need a central midfield player and a centre half, because obviously Johnny can't keep going on. He's getting on. Varane, we know his issues. You know, Martinez, I'm hoping he's going to be back next season.
It's probably going to take three windows for us to see the squad in the image of the new sporting department. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to happen in just one summer. But I believe they want to get rid of 10 players in the summer window. So that's something we haven't seen at all. Maybe not at all in my lifetime, to be honest with
you. Yeah. It's one of those things, I think it can be done. Obviously, because of the sheer incompetence we've gone through over the years, we think, you know, it can't happen at United. So it'll be interesting to see how the new regime approach things.
Yeah. Now, the only question is, well, we know who's going to be taking up the main roles, it seems, but the start date seems to be the big question hanging over because of all this gardening leave that they're on. It's obviously built into their contracts.
I'm sure they'll sort something out. I can't see them wanting to just send him on gardening leave for a year and a half. It doesn't help anyone, doesn't help them either. Just paying someone to do nothing doesn't make sense, does it?
I think Newcastle seem to be worried that Don Ashworth knows all their secrets. What secrets? Ooh. What have they done that's so special? Like, honestly, and even this talk that they've locked his database so he can't see it. So apparently, he basically has a database on containing every professional footballer in the world, it seems.
Okay, but I mean, surely that's not exclusive to Newcastle. Like, I'm sure he has a little database for himself, right?
Yeah,
you would keep tabs on players. Like, you can't wipe his memory, you know.
But apparently one of the columns in his database is personality of the player. It's something that we've talked about a lot.
Yes, it's imperative, yes. And this is one of the things, when we signed Anthony that I was quite concerned about, I talked about at the time, but people didn't really care too much. I didn't like how he forced his move. And I know it's a very little thing. At the time, you know, we were the big club. People were going, oh, you know, we're offering so much money, why don't they accept? And, you know, they're never going to get a better offer than this. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's up to the club if they want to sell or not, irrespective of what you're offering, right? And then I just thought it was very unprofessional the way he acted on top of that. And I just thought, you know what? If he can do that to them, he can do that to us. And I remember being on the receiving end of that when Cristiano went to Real Madrid. And it was the same sort of thing. And I didn't like it then. And I didn't like it now. But, you know, these are little character faults that, you know, when you really look at it, they come to fruition later down the line. This is why it's important to do your due diligence on the kind of personalities you're bringing in.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But, I mean, there's going to be no scenario where Anthony is angling for a move to Real Madrid. He's just not good enough to be even considered by Real Madrid, not even close.
Well, this was 2 years ago, right? So back when he still looked like a prospect.
Yeah, and also it was James Ducker of the Telegraph said that, you know, there had been allegations made against him while he was at Ajax.
These are the kind of things that, you know, if we're run properly, we need to investigate. Because, yeah, obviously with the agents and players, there will be cover-ups of certain things. But you know, you need to investigate as much as possible. Obviously, you can't always negate for everything, but there's certainly more that we can do to iron out these things.
Yeah, and I just don't think that Sancho was the right character either.
For what again, that's another one where apparently there are already signs at Dortmund.
Yeah, this guy's just going to waste his career, isn't he?
Potentially. I mean, he's still got age on his side, but that only gets you so far. You still need to have the determination and the right attitude.
But when he's done nothing for United in 2.5 years, then he gets a loan spell back to the club where he made his name, and he's still doing nothing.
Yeah,
that's not a good
sign. To be honest, I didn't expect him to just go there and it would just suddenly click back. I didn't think he would just go and start rediscovering his form. You still have to put work in, right?
He doesn't have any kind of work rate. It ain't going to happen for him unless he completely changes how he approaches, how he applies himself,
That's the thing. For his sake, I hope he does it. If not, he could end up being the next Dele Alli. Look at him from where he was, during those Spurs years to where he is now. And he's still only like 27, 28, I think, which is quite damning.
Another wasted talent, as we've seen with his interview with Gary Neville, he has a lot of demons and mental health issues as well, which we have to take into account.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, though, Carl, I was thinking when I was watching that, I was like, but you had these same demons when you were scoring all those goals and playing really well.
Yeah, but I suppose that can lead to inconsistencies.
I do hope he gets the help that he needs. But the pitch, that is something that we take for granted. I know Aaron Lennon went through something quite serious as well while he was at Everton.
And Sancho as well, of course. We have to mention that. He had 4 months out.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. I think that's probably what irks fans more, though. The fact that last season, the manager took him to his side, gave him all that time off and come back. And then, the fact that it led to this is just disappointing.
Yeah, but it's bad when Sancho at Dortmund in his first spell there was accusing the club of making him out to be a scapegoat, and then he does the same thing at United. There's a pattern forming there, and we come back to Gen Z again, where they don't accept any accountability for their own actions and they tend to blame everyone else.
And with that one, the club have to take responsibility as well, because we chased him for so long. So you would think that they did all of their due diligence in that time,
Another massive waste of money, to be honest. Yep. Money that we're never going to get back again. And obviously, I just want to make the point that whenever I reference Gen Z as a millennial, I'm generalizing. I'm not saying that everybody's like that. It's just a stereotype, if you like. And what other people might say, it's just that it's different generation. But sure, the baby boomers got annoyed at us.
I think every generation says it about the one that comes after.
It's always the same.
Because even Fergie, the one thing that we really have to take our hats off to is the way he adapted his style of management and man management as he, got on and dealt with different generations. Like, the way he dealt with Giggsy and Sharpie wasn't the same by the time Rooney Ronaldo came about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way he dealt with Rooney and the way he dealt with Nani was completely different. It was like night and day.
I remember listening to the Lee Sharp episode of the United podcast, and he was saying the first time he got a tattoo, he was so shit scared of the gaffer seeing it, he pretty much like covered his arm like the whole season. and then the one time the gaffer did see it, he said he came up to him and gave him a slap and called him an idiot.
And now they're just covered in tattoos.
They're just covered, aren't they? Yeah.
Lee Sharp's stories are about Fergie are immense. There's been quite a few of them. He talked about at full time at Selhurst Park in the game where Cantona was sent off for the Kung Fu kick. He said about Fergie, smashing teacups and throwing egg crisp sandwiches and having a go at Incy and Giggs. and then just saying, and can't go around doing things like that, son, you know, looking at our Cantona, you know, like other people were getting their balls chewed off them. Yeah, Cantona is the one who committed, you know, the major crime in the match, and he just gets like a wee slap on the wrist.
And you know what it is? It's probably very clever. It's probably the anger he had towards what had happened with Cantona. He just had to get it out in a different way.
Yeah, he knew how demand management, how demand management different people.
Yeah, you know, that was the key.
Another Lee Sharp story was about, you know, the house parties they used to have.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. Yeah, Fergie shutting it down. Turning the music off and kicking everyone out.
There was he said people would be escaping out the back window of the house, you know, when Fergie roll up in the car. He said there was at the time a taxi driver in Manchester who looked like Fergie. And somebody at the party was saying, you know, Fergie's out the front. They're like, nah, it's probably just that taxi driver that looks like him. And it really was him. And then, I think Lee Sharp realized it was actually Fergie and not the taxi driver, because people were climbing out the back window and running across the fields out the back, you know, to get away. And then they would go out partying, like either in Manchester or even in London. Yet Fergie would know exactly what they drank and how many bottles they bought. You know, no matter how far away they were, he had somebody watching them. Yeah, so it was like, it's funny whenever they tell the stories from that.
Yeah,
so
there's ones like that. The Beckham era, obviously, you know, because he wasn't happy with what Bex was doing off the field. There was one story that Ish told actually quite recently when he popped up on the overlap, where he had a mojito, which he didn't show off in training or anything. He was just wearing a beanie hat. So it was only on match day that he, you know, that Fergie saw it. And Fergie told him to go shave it off.
Of course he did.
And he was like, if he didn't do it, he wasn't going to play. So,
Fergie.
Like, could you imagine that now? Like, because, you know, because these guys come out with all kinds of hairstyles and colours and, you know.
I wonder what Fergie would make of these, you know, Gen Z footballers. Sancho and Rashford and Lingard and all these guys.
I'd love to get his opinion on people who have like tattoos of themselves.
I mean, Fergie, he is from like, what is it, the silent generation or the traditionalist generation? The ones before the baby boomer. So he's a man in his 80s. So he's
but considering that, it's quite impressive the way he adapted throughout the years.
Yeah, but would this current generation be a step too far for him? You know,
maybe. I think this generation is a step too far for a lot of people. I mean, I feel my age now, Carl, because I'd be looking at Garnacho sometimes, going, "God, why is this kid covered in ink? He's only 19." Like, you know, how many of those is he going to regret in 10 years' time? Jeez.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I suppose it's one of them things where you've got so much money and nothing to spend it on. So,
and to be honest, I have nothing against tattoos or anything of that nature. Like, yeah, it does look nice and whatnot. I just think it should come with age, though, you know? Like, they say the human brain doesn't even fully develop till you're 25. And if half of your body's already inked at 19, it's a bit ridiculous. But I did. I felt like a proper old man. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, is dad or mum or someone should have clipped around the ear.
Yeah. Do you know what I really hate? Those these neck tattoos. Like Ederson. I think Anthony might have one as well. Yeah, they just look awful to me. Just not my cup of tea at all.
With Ederson, though, I think, you know, once you've covered your body, you've not really got much space left, have you?
No, it must be an addiction.
It must be.
We got a little sidetracked there, so I'm just gonna come on to the player ratings, and then I'm gonna look at. I have to mention Solskjaer's appearance in the overlap. If you've seen that,
yes, I've seen that,
and also the plans to redevelop Old Trafford and the surrounding areas. Obviously, another announcement was made on Friday about that. So, Onana, I'm gonna say 7. Diogo Dalot, 6. Johnny Evans a 7, Varane a 7, very solid today. Victor Lindelof a 6, not really troubled today, because that says more about Everton, really. The midfield 3 again, that was we saw against City. Kobbie Mainoo, I'm going to say a 6. Casemiro, a bit of a ropey first half, no better second half. Some of his passing was wayward in that first half. But yeah, he made some really good tackles and interventions, as he quite often does. Should have scored a header at the end of the game. He tried to head it across goal rather than going for goal himself. But probably a 6 for Casemiro. Bruno Fernandes scored a penalty, obviously. I don't think he was a standout performance from him either. You know, as it wasn't from United, as we talked about. So I'll say 6 for scoring the penalty. Rashford, likewise. Again, just a very, very average display from him. I thought Rashford against City, by the way, after the goal, he was atrocious.
It faded, didn't it? Especially, you know, the one where it looked like he had a chance, but then he fell over instead of continuing the run. That kind of bugged me. It kind of summed up his game, you know. We saw a moment of brilliance, something out of nothing, and then that, where you expect him to kick on and do something, and he opts to fall over.
I think what happened was that, oh yes, the one where Kyle Walker put his hand.
Yeah.
And then there was one where he tried to head the ball in front of himself, and he headed it backwards instead. And then there was one at the back post where he had a lash at it, then he made no contact with the ball. And
progressively, like it just became a very stagnant performance.
So 6 today from Rashford, and that's just for scoring the penalty, really. Garnacho, Man United's man of the match. I mean, you knew after 40 minutes that he was going to get the man of the match.
Yeah.
You know. So 8 for Garnacho, and it's got McTominay. A 5, you know, very poor in the centre of the park, and you know, giving away, you know, he got a yellow card, sorry, because he miscontrolled and then had to make a tackle, which is something we've seen from many times. Mm-hmm. You know, people who listen to this podcast will know I'm not a fan of Scott McTominay, despite the winning goals that he's got this season. But I do feel as if a lot of teams in the Premier League will want him because of the goal threat that he is. So it's a chance for United to cash in, I feel. Especially when you need to raise money to buy this summer.
Also, when you look at the age as well, because I know he still looks very young, but he's about 27 now.
Yeah, now's the time to get good money for him. And, yeah, substitutions were very late on. And so Ten Hag got the points, so I'll give him a 6, but I wasn't impressed. So, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I mean, it was some revelations from his appearance on the overlap. He talked about the signing of Ronaldo. Oh, he talked about the final game against Watford, how he knew that his time was up at United at halftime in that game. And he asked the players, you know, who wants to play the second half, and put your hand up if you don't. And some people were getting into a frenzy because they looked at the stats from that game and seeing that Rashford and McTominay came off at halftime, but having done some further research, I think McTominay, I don't think which one's which here. I think they were both carrying an injury going into the game and they were,
The main thing I remember from that game is that Donny van der Beek came on and was one of the few bright sparks.
Yeah, it was ironic. He scored the final goal under Solskjaer's reign, and Solskjaer never really gave him a chance.
So,
I don't think, you know, despite all my criticism of Rashford and McTominay, I don't think they asked to be substituted at halftime in that game. That's my belief. I think they were. You know, at least one of them was carrying an injury.
I didn't even think deeply into it, to be honest. Quite often,
Solskjaer would bring people back from injury too early.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me.
And players like Rashford, I mean, he wouldn't take him off, like, no matter how shattered he was.
I think what it was, here's what it was. McTominay was carrying injury going into the game, so he came off at halftime because I think he wasn't able to continue. And Rashford was really poor in the first half and probably just substituted. I would hate to believe that anyone said, I'm not feeling it anymore, I want to come off at halftime. I don't think that's what happened.
Yeah. I think people just interpret things, don't they? And just muddle
because it
own
fits
agendas.
Their narrative.
Yeah, yeah, it fits their agendas. The main thing, though, that I was really intrigued by, obviously, was to learn about the recruitment and transfer setup and who has the final say and the process behind that. And obviously, his feelings on Jude and Haaland. And I thought it was very interesting that he brought Haaland to their attention. You know, it was so early on.
But they did listen to him.
For 20 million and they didn't listen.
Yeah, he was 100% right about that, obviously. And
And at that time, had you looked into it, you know, he probably could have got the deal done. Ultimately, I think Haaland did what was right for his career in going to Dortmund. Because, you know, they had a proven track record of developing young players.
Yeah, I suppose it feels right for him also to follow in the footsteps of his dad rather than coming to the rivals of the clubs that his dad played for. That wouldn't have made logical sense, really. But this is down to United's incompetence again.
And this is the thing. Oh, Carl, he touched on it as well. Ollie touched on that and said, like, had we acted early in those days, he doesn't think that that connection would have, you know, really stopped that from happening. Had we got in there early. Yeah. The Jude thing was interesting as well, because obviously, you know, he got the full tour of the stadium and everything, and he met all the legends and whatnot. But yeah, the young man already had a clear idea of what he wanted, and he wanted minutes, and you couldn't guarantee it at United.
Yeah, I remember that from the time. But I didn't know that it ruled out Fergie, Cantona, and Brian Robson, and Keane was supposed to be there that day as well.
Yeah. But I'm kind of with Roy, though, with what he was saying. I think, you know, that shouldn't be the deciding factor of what convinces you to sign.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, he wouldn't have got the minutes that he got at Dortmund. Him and his dad knew that he wasn't going to be a starter for United right away. And that's what they wanted, to develop him.
And that's the thing. Like, when we think of young players, you know, Dortmund is a destination now because they've built that reputation up over many, many years. And of having that track record of giving young players that time to develop.
Yeah, so United, Solskjaer phoned United when Haaland was at Molde to say, you sign this player, and they would have gotten him for buttons. Then again, when he was at Salzburg, Solskjaer says he didn't play at Salzburg for the first 3 or 4 months, he told United this is the time to get him. Activate his 20 million release clause, and they didn't listen.
And then he was available again at Dortmund for 60 million. But by then, he's firing on all cylinders and other teams are interested.
They were competing with City and Real Madrid, so it was out of the question at that point.
Yeah.
And buying him. In addition to that, obviously, Solskjaer didn't mention it, but obviously we've already heard that he never really got talking to Fergie that much anyway because John Murta interrupted, which was a total shambles, really, to be honest. The most important thing that he wanted to hear from Solskjaer was that he was going to play, but you can never give a 16-year-old that kind of guarantee unless you're Dortmund and that's what you specialise in. Obviously, none of this matters now because these players are not going to play for Manchester United ever, probably. But it is interesting to get an insight as to how Man United works.
But it's important that we learn from these things, Carl. So that's why it's good to revisit them, just so we know what not to do the next time these kind of talents pop up.
Yeah, and we have to mention the Ronaldo situation, which was also interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that he agreed to the signing, he takes responsibility for that.
Yeah.
But he admits that in hindsight it was the wrong decision.
For both of them.
Both of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he felt that United were one of the best pressing teams in the league until Ronaldo came in and ruined that.
and had to change it. Yeah. So he said like they had to adjust as well. So when he wasn't in the team, and also mentioned that, you know, obviously personality like Ronnie, he doesn't like not playing. So then, you know.
Yeah. Well. He said, this was an interesting comment, that they had an agreement that, no, Ronaldo actually asked him, play me in three games.
Yeah, three out of four games.
Play me in three games and give me a rest in the fourth. But whenever he did that, then Ronaldo would kick up a stink. There would be reports in the media of Ronaldo not being happy. Fergie would be unhappy. That's good. See out there. That is absurd.
Yeah.
And totally unfair on Solskjaer to be treated that way by Ronaldo and Fergie whenever he was just doing what Ronaldo asked for. You know, it's just, that's impossible for any coach to manage in that situation. You know, it's bad enough having to manage Ronaldo's ego, but Fergie on your case as well. See, this is the problem with having a former Fergie player as the coach, because Fergie probably feels then that he can, you know, give input and control that coach because he knows
probably.
Him.
Yep.
So that's just never going to work. That is not a sustainable situation. And then, of course, we started off that season really well, and then results started to spiral. When we got into the autumn, and eventually it led to Solskjaer sacking. But what was also interesting is that he mentioned the thumping at home to Liverpool, the 5-0, and then the 2-0 at home to City, where they just toyed with us, where Bailly scored the bizarre own goal. He said in those games that he basically took the handbrake off and allowed United to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool and City, because he felt as if, you know, his third season in charge, and he felt, this is Manchester United, we can't keep playing low block counter-attacking football. We're playing at home here. You know, we've signed Varane, Sancho and Ronaldo in the summer. Let's go out and play some football and take these teams on. And obviously it didn't work out. It turned out the team was not ready for that. But that was interesting that, you know, that he made a decision to go toe-to-toe with these teams, you know, because he felt as if Manchester United have to play this way at home. You know, even though the sensible thing would have been to just, you know, defend and play counter-attacking football, but he discovered afterwards that United simply weren't ready to take on these teams toe-to-toe.
Definitely. Yeah. It's an impossible situation, isn't it? The manager ultimately has to have overall control. But again, you know, if you felt so strongly about it, you should know the profile of somebody like Ronnie, even the issues he was having at Juventus at the time. So you need to know what it is that you're signing. So, yeah, you know, you really should have said no if that's not what you wanted.
Yeah. Certain fans have been getting a bit, you know, sentimental towards Solskjaer in recent times, even without that interview, and feel as if he got a raw deal at United.
I mean, listen, he'll always be a legend to me as a player, as a manager, and I've said this many times, he shouldn't have got that job in the first place, if we're being honest.
I agree with you.
You know, he was never qualified for that as a, you know, as the next permanent manager. He hadn't achieved anything. He came from Cardiff. It's not really the foundation to set you up for anything at United, despite your history as a player.
No, but, you know, he kind of done better than I thought he would. You know, obviously at the end it was horrendous.
It was absolutely horrible. But I did enjoy his interim run. His interim run was great. But again, you know, there's less pressure on you as interim.
He basically beat Manchester City every time we played them.
Mm-hmm.
That was his incredible record.
I think what we mustn't do though is look back through rose-tinted glasses, because when it went wrong, it did go very, very wrong.
Yeah, there were peaks and troughs.
Because we tend to do that after some time has passed, don't we? Especially when things aren't going well in the immediate future. We always think back to how things were and sort of ask, oh, was it really as bad as we thought? Yeah, it was. It was bad.
Yeah, it was very up and down. And then at the end, it was very, very down. And, you know, something had to give. You know, if even when he came in, obviously we got a massive lift in those first 14 games, you know, ending with us beating PSG. But then from after that PSG game to the end of the season, it was dreadful. Then we had a very poor start to the next season. And then after lockdown, we picked up again. So it was constant up and downs all the time.
Yeah.
But probably another reason why he was able to have good spells was because of the quality of the forwards that he had at his disposal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the team that he had in terms of forwards, you know, throughout his time at the club, he had Rashford, who's, you know, playing some of his best football. He had Martial playing some of his best football. He had Cavani, he had Ronaldo, he had Greenwood. So it was no wonder that we were known as Moments FC. You know, we'd be very poor for most of games. There was no pattern or style of play, but it was just individual brilliance would win us games. I remember even beating West Ham, for example, and we only played well for about 10 minutes, but we won like 3-0. Because we scored three brilliant goals in a 10-minute spell, and that was just typical of Solskjaer. He also had Pogba and Fernandes playing midfield, you know, behind these players. Some people say that the midfield lacked balance when them two were playing, and
it did for me.
I can see their point. Yeah,
it did for me. I thought it was kind of ridiculous.
Which is why he kept reverting back to Fred and McTominay, you know, the old McFred partnership. But yeah, he was able to win so many games because of the quality of the strikers that he had.
Yeah.
I mean, when you he put it this way, he had a better forward line to choose from than what Ten Hag does. But then Ten Hag definitely,
because he had a Martial that could still contribute something. And yeah. You know, in that lockdown period, we probably the best spell of Martial that we saw.
NHS Martial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got a hat-trick even in one of those games.
He had a brilliant little chipped goal at Watford as well during that lockdown period. It's the last time he really shone.
Yeah, I remember Rashford getting a hat-trick against RB Leipzig, Nagelsmann's RB Leipzig at Old Trafford.
We dismantled them. I remember that because Nagelsmann rocked up looking like he just walked out of a H&M catalogue.
Yeah. But then what happened in the away leg and the final group match?
Yeah.
They knocked us out of the Champions League. I think we went 3-0 down after the first 20 minutes of that game. That was typical Solskjaer. If you look at those two Leipzig games, it was like night and day, and that was a problem.
I remember that as well, because it was before one of the Leipzig games where some of the Mino Raiola comments about Pogba come out.
That was the one,
circus,
the one,
yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah, absolute circus.
Yeah. It was the night before we were play them in Leipzig, where we lost 3-2 with 3-0 down. I think Pogba came on as a substitute that night and actually was involved in a couple of the consolation goals that we got. But me and Raiola the night before said that Pogba wanted to leave Manchester United or something like that. Totally.
Yeah, so really. Apparently the interview was given like 2 weeks prior, but obviously these outlets
are
going to save it for the perfect timing.
Mino knew exactly what he was doing. Yeah. But like journalists, they know they time things very well.
Yeah, absolutely. For maximum exposure and for the impact. That's exactly it.
Yeah, maximum impact. So it was interesting to get it. It's always good to get an insight into what went on in the past. You know, unfortunately, we never get to know everything that's going on currently. We also have to wait a few years before we find out what actually happened.
What actually transpired, yeah, definitely.
I also believe that Mourinho is doing a Netflix documentary and he's going to reveal all from his time at Manchester United. So
that's going to be very interesting.
A lot of United fans are going to tune into that one too.
Definitely. I did see his interview with Rio on his Five podcast. But yeah, they didn't dive too much into his United stint as I would have liked.
So, there is going to be a task force who are going to be in charge of the development of a new stadium and the surrounding area of Old Trafford. That task force will include Andy Burnham, the Greater Manchester Mayor, Gary Neville, who's obviously a property developer in the Manchester area, and obviously former United captain, and also Sebastian Coe, or Lord Coe, whatever you prefer to call him. He obviously had a big role in the London Olympics.
Him and David Beckham played a big role in that. I remember his name popping up around that time in the lead up to us winning that.
So plan A is obviously to build a new stadium beside Old Trafford.
Mm-hmm.
And plan B would be to redevelop the current Old Trafford. I think what would be great would be to build a brand new stadium beside it on the same site where the United first team play all their home matches. And we obviously, we hope to get the odd Champions League final, FA Cup final, England games. You know, that's what the target by Radcliffe as well. He thinks that the North should get their fair share of mm-hmm. those showpiece events. But keep the old Old Trafford for youth team matches and women's games and all that sort of thing. You can still keep it there, you know, and have a multi-stadium site like Man City have, and you know, Madrid and Barcelona, for example. So that would be my ideal scenario, to have the new Old Trafford and the old one as well. What do you think, Rush?
It makes absolute sense. You know, we've seen as much as, you know, because there's a lot of sentiment when it comes to Old Trafford, you know, and I totally feel that as well. But as the modern game moves on, we have to look at some of the biggest clubs in Europe who've made that call and they've moved on. The likes of Bayern Munich, the likes of Juventus, Atletico Madrid. And we have been left behind. This, for me, is a win-win. You get to keep the integrity of Old Trafford, along with moving to a new state-of-the-art facility, which would see us through in the future. But also, once all of that's done, they'll probably make amendments to the current Old Trafford as well, I presume, if they want to use it for youth and the women's team and whatnot. So, yeah, I see it as a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much potential. I mean, and also, I would love to see United create like a fans park or something, or you know, a big giant pub, if you like, for that that's owned by the club to watch games in as well, or I also racked a big screen. What I definitely don't want is the, you know, what we see at Manchester City. I don't know if you've seen the footage of whenever the City team coach arrives and there's like an MC announcing the arrival of the team. And every player steps off. I have seen
footage of that. I didn't know that happened at every game.
And as every player steps off the coach, they're announced to the crowd and all. It's so cringy. It's like watching an NFL game.
It's quite Americanified. It's like, kind of thing, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like we don't have an atmosphere, so we're going to try and manufacture one, and it's. It's pure cringe, and I don't want United to become that, obviously, but I do think that we should have some kind of fans facility on site as well, especially for those who are unfortunate enough not to get tickets for the game, or even for people, you know, to go before and after the match. You know, people like to have a few drinks with their friends before and after the match, because for anyone who's been to Old Trafford, they will know that there are several pubs in and around the stadium, but there's just not enough space for 75,000 people, like in those facilities, and it's very, very cramped. So if United could build like a super pub, that would be brilliant, or even have some kind of fan park in that area. So United have so much space to work with there.
Exactly. And obviously they'll see the commercial side of things as well with something like that, right? So it's mutually beneficial for all.
And I think they're also talking about maybe building social housing as well, and more of that in the area, which is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would be up for ban one, or get myself in one of those, you know, and then get a season ticket. I've heard someone else say that if you're never going to build a new stadium, they need to go all the way and make it a 100,000-seater stadium. You know, let's be ambitious about it. That would be brilliant.
That is quite ambitious. I think with the way new stadiums are constructed, surely they can do it where, you know, you can. It's easier to add on to it in future if you wanted to. You know, that makes sense. So perhaps you don't have to splurge on the 100,000-seater immediately, but say you do go for an 85 or something, maybe with plans which make it easier to then extend for future renovation.
Yeah, because obviously that's an issue with the Sir Bobby Charlton stand, is that it's right beside a railway line and makes it difficult to make it bigger. Although apparently they do have the technology now to do that, but
yeah,
it obviously creates an awkwardness.
It does.
Yeah, there's so many different things that United can do, but I'd love for United to have like a Tottenham Hotspur style stadium.
Yeah, definitely.
And how strange would it be for United to have like a roof that opens and closes and all as well?
The thing is, it's one of those where, for me, I would definitely miss Old Trafford. Like, there's no replacing Old Trafford. So, you know, it would definitely be different seeing them play in another stadium. But if they could keep Old Trafford as well, then, you know, I don't see an issue.
Yeah. Have you seen the modern Bernabeu as well?
The Bernabeu is incredible. Like, I saw the full breakdown of everything the new stadium has to offer. And, you know, the way they've done it is, yeah, crazy, so advanced, and it's capable of they can switch out the turf, they can hold concerts there without anything getting damaged. It's amazing.
You can switch out the turf with the press of a button.
Yeah. It's amazing how that happened. Obviously the retractable roof as well, right? Temperature control, all of that.
Yeah, and you know, at various times in the year in Madrid, they would need, you know, air conditioning and all.
Yeah,
so I'm sure they have that in place. I don't know if you've seen on TV, the United played in this stadium against Dortmund, I think it was, in the summer, and Las Vegas, the new stadium.
Oh, the Raiders stadium. That was incredible. Yeah. That, because I think we talked about it at the time, actually. I was like, yep, this is the kind of blueprint we need. Obviously, on a slightly smaller scale to suit our needs. But, you know, yeah, because that was incredible. I'd never seen anything like that. That Raiders stadium was crazy. It had its own bar and VIP section and so many different things. And yeah, the whole thing, the fact that, you know, it's temperature controlled, I thought was very cool.
Yeah, because it's Las Vegas, it's the desert.
It's Vegas, it's very, isn't very it? Hot, yeah, right? Yeah, so they need to. So yeah, incredible.
When United were playing there against Dortmund in that preseason friendly, it was 120 Fahrenheit outside the stadium, but only 80 Fahrenheit inside the stadium because it was so well air conditioned.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's far more bearable.
Quite the feat, yeah. I mean, yeah, I still would have struggled inside that stadium, to be honest. That's too hot for my liking. Yeah. But even so, yeah, it's engineering-wise, it's, you know, just look at it in awe.
We won't have that much trouble at Old Trafford when it comes to the heat.
No, you don't have to worry about that, to be fair.
It's the rain that we want to keep out, you know, if we want to, or the frost, obviously, and the ice, and the snow, obviously, in the wintertime. You know, if we
and then also
modern,
just
modern
being,
stadium,
yeah, and then also, you know, part of the modern game, you know, you have to look at the commercial revenue and stuff, right? And obviously, especially with, they've scuppered plans for the HS2, which was supposed to be a train line that connected north to south. It was supposed to run from, you know, from Manchester to Birmingham to London. And because of escalating costs and the poor management of money by the government over the years, they've kind of scuppered what would have linked the north to the Midlands. So yeah, to have a state-of-the-art stadium where you can hold concerts and things would actually, you know, it would generate a lot of revenue for local businesses and what else, whatever else. So yeah, it's a good thing.
Because we never have concerts at Old Trafford anymore.
Our stadium gets overlooked now for a lot of things.
Yeah, including the Euros.
Yeah. Even I was just gonna say, even for football matches, let alone concerts and things.
The only thing that the current Old Trafford holds, apart from United games, is the grand final of the Rugby League and Soccer Aid. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think the Etihad is holding like all these, you know, world famous concerts, you know, they're holding Guns N' Roses and Oasis and Beyonce and all the rest.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, we don't want to be left behind. We want to be right up there.
Yeah, the Glazers have just left us in the doldrums, really, when it comes to just about everything, apart from our commercial revenue.
And that's the thing, it's not just beneficial to the club, like, because the local economy sees that boom as well, you know, with the footfall. Everybody wins.
Because, like, all the small businesses. Local businesses only get, on average, local businesses in the Trafford area only get to benefit from United games once every fortnight. So if you're having more regular events at Old Trafford, obviously it helps them more.
Absolutely, especially in the summer and stuff as well, you know, where the team are away on pre-season touring other countries as well. So Old Trafford just there. Imagine the concerts and things you could hold. Somebody like a Taylor Swift comes down, like, everybody wins.
I'll be there 100% for Swifty. You know, I wouldn't miss it.
Oh, one of my friends has got a ticket already. He can't wait till she comes down. I think in Wembley later this year, in August sometime, I think.
It'll be massive for the people who enjoy that.
Huge. The numbers are startling. She, you know, generates more money than certain small countries.
Crazy. So on that note, we shall wrap it up there. If everyone could please like the video, subscribe to the podcast, and get more of your thoughts in, as Simon has done earlier in the show, and I will get back to as many of those as possible. And shout out to the people also listening on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Please give us a 5-star rating and help us grow the podcast. So thanks as always, Brish, for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Pleasure. I'll catch you next time.
All right, I'll see you later.